gospel. As we focus on the subject of walking boldly into the future with fear, this text has much to say. The reading begins. So have no fear of them, for nothing is covered up that will not be uncovered, and nothing secret that will not become known. What I say to you in the dark, tell in the light, and what you hear whispered, proclaim from the housetops. Do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground unperceived by your Father. And even the hairs of your head are all counted. So do not be afraid. You are of more value than many sparrows. Everyone, therefore, who acknowledges me before others, I also will acknowledge before my Father in heaven. But whoever denies me before others, I also will deny before my Father in heaven. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
I've changed it from the monster. I'm going to use my preaching notes now, so if you're worried, I have. What's that? Okay. Let's join together in prayer. O Holy One, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be ever and always acceptable unto you. For you are our rock and our redeemer, our Alpha and our Omega, our beginning and our end, the source of our love, and a wellspring of our joys. Amen. Fear. What are you afraid of? What does the monster under the bed look like to you? We as people have some very odd fears, don't we? We have different priorities in what we fear and what we don't. Quite often our fears are irrational. Quite often they're unexamined and we haven't really taken them out and looked at them. I love stand-up comedy, and I was listening to a favorite comedian of mine, and he was making some interesting observations about fears, those things that we do and those that we don't. And he said one of the top fears in North America, public speaking. And below that, one of the fears, dying. He said, isn't it odd that at a funeral setting, we would rather lie there in the casket than be up at the front giving the eulogy? We have some odd priorities in our fears. Very odd indeed. Some things we're terrified of, and others, they don't seem to worry us at all. The text gives some very interesting teaching about fears. In fact, when we first take it out and look at it, it's quite puzzling in the way Jesus describes it. Jesus says, do not be afraid. And then he says, be afraid. And then he says, do not be afraid, and highlights that once more by saying, do not be afraid again. Do not be afraid, be afraid, do not be afraid, do not be afraid. What is going on in this reading, we wonder? I think as I'm looking at this text, at least for me, I think Jesus is aware that there are two different kinds of threats that Jesus' followers will face in their life. There are some threats that we should be very afraid of. And there are some threats that we do not need to pay attention to. We do not need to be afraid of the physical threats, Jesus says. Those threats, as he says, that can kill the body but not the soul. He's referring, of course, in his day and age to Rome, to Herod, to those ways that were oppressing and killing the followers of Jesus. We do not need to be afraid of those threats that can only kill the body. But there are threats that we do need to pay attention to. There are threats to us that we need to be very fearful of. There are threats that are coming from the darker enemies, perhaps. Those ways that battle for not just our physical bodies, but our spiritual selves as well. Those ways that tempt us away from following Jesus' path, those things that tempt us away from following the light of Christ, those things that tempt us away from being disciples of the risen one. The text puts it this way: do not fear those who can kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Fear those who can kill both body and soul in hell. Our fears should be directed towards those that can take us away from our calling to be disciples of Jesus. Our fears should be directed at those that take us away from following the way of Christ. Our fears should be directed at those that take us away from following the light in the path that Jesus offers to each of us. This text is truly one about discipleship. I wanted the kids to be exposed to that word, and they probably heard it before, I'm sure. But it's a big word that we indeed need to own and claim as followers of Jesus. To be disciples of Jesus, to be followers of Jesus, this text indeed speaks volumes about what that truly means, about living out our faith. And I would suggest to you that the 27th verse of this passage is where the real meat is found. This would be ripe for a bumper sticker for the best car. What I say to you in the dark, tell it in the light. And what you hear whispered, proclaim it from the housetops. This text is a call for us to lean into our fears. This text is a call for us to lean into our fears and truly move ahead, living out our faith, telling it in the light, proclaiming it from the housetops. This text is a call for us to be, in our each unique individual ways, a call for us to be disciples of Jesus Christ. But let's be honest. Let's be honest. We're all afraid of that, aren't we? I know I am. I know I'm afraid when I think about this kind of stuff, because it's a whole lot easier to stay in the dark than to live it in the light, isn't it? It's a whole lot easier to whisper things than to proclaim them from the housetops. I know I'm afraid. Fear lives in all of us, and it is such a powerful motivator. I've had lots of conversations, so I know with you also, I know that you're following as much as I am the American presidential campaign. It's fascinating to follow. And have you noticed how much fear has played a role in the communication that they're offering, their campaigns? It's all about invoking fear and motivating and using that fear that lies inside each and every one of us. And why not? Fear is such a powerful and pervasive motivator in human psychology, isn't it? Anyone who is afraid of the future, and who isn't these days? Anyone who is afraid of the future will follow people who promise to make things great once again. And long before Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton, fear has been a driving force behind vast segments of the economy. And I would suggest that fear lies behind so much of our day-to-day activity that we often don't even recognize it. Fear is so powerful and insidious, and it rests inside each and every one of us. And fear, from time to time, needs to be taken out, looking under the bed, and examining it, and see what we really need to be afraid of. And I think that is what the purpose of this text is. I think Jesus, more than anyone, realizes that fear works. Fear is such a powerful motivator, and he wants his disciples to be prepared. He knows that fear will ultimately be the downfall for his followers' discipleship. Once his disciples have left the comfort of their home to follow him, he knows the first thing they will reach is opposition. They will reach opposition, and we know the way the story ends. They will ultimately bow towards the power of fear. On the one hand, it's interesting, on the one hand, Jesus gives his people power to heal, power to cleanse the lepers, power to exorcise demons, power to even raise the dead. Those are the powers they've been given. But on the other hand, Jesus does not give them the tools of money. He does not give them support. He does not even give them sandals for their feet. They are to go out into the world with complete reliance upon God.
What brings people into your office? How do they get there?
One of the texts puts it, they're to go out as sheep amidst the wolves. And they will face arrests. They will face beatings. Some of them will even face crucifixion. Indeed, it has been since the earliest time and continues to be today. The life of the Christ follower is profoundly challenging and difficult. And it gets worse. You haven't run out the door yet, but it gets worse. There's an additional fear that I think in our modern context comes to us today as well. The fear of not having enough time. Is that a fear you can relate to? It's a book I read not too long ago, a homiletics preaching professor named Charles Campbell. His book is entitled The Word Before Power. And in his book, he argues that the principalities and powers of the world today maintain their control over us by keeping us so busy, by keeping us so tired, by keeping us so diverted from the mission and ministry of Jesus that we don't have enough time to accomplish what we are called to do and be as disciples of Jesus. At the end of the day, he says, we come home from work, from life, exhausted. We can barely put food on the table. We barely have enough energy to flop out on the couch and turn the television on and go to bed. And we repeat that pattern day in and day out and day in and day out. He says we live life today at a minimum. I love his one quote in his book. He says, we say that we want change, yet we actually want things to stay the same. We just want to feel better about it. It's a challenging diagnosis, isn't it? But I think that's kind of the Christian paradox, isn't it? In some days, on the one hand, we want things to be truly whole. We want to be whole. We want to be connected with God. We want to be connected with creation. We want to be connected with our neighbors and our neighborhood. We want to live out our faith. But that means getting up off the couch and living out our faith in the way that we are called. Following Jesus, saying, here I am, Jesus, here I am, Lord. Send me, Jesus, send me, Lord. That means we risk also getting crucified like Jesus was as well. I have this quote in my head, and I can't remember where I first heard it. I'd love to give credit for it, but he said, if you want to follow Jesus, you'd better look good on wood, because that's where you will most likely end up. It's one that sticks, doesn't it? Well, today's focus, as Carrie began our service, is on Rally Sunday. Rally Sunday, a focus on how we are individually expressing our unique ministries, how we individually express our call to live out our faith at our church, how we are individually expressing our discipleship as part of the Northwood community. And after the service, we'll be exploring many of the different ways that we might live out our faith. Last week, we talked a lot about purpose, purpose-based living. And today, we're kind of exploring some of those blocks, some of those boundaries, those barriers that stop us from living out that faith. And I know we'll be afraid as we kind of come to the end of that, as we think about what does that look like. We're afraid that there's not enough time. We're afraid that we aren't maybe perhaps good at things. We might be afraid that we're not ready. But this, as we look at the text, is a time for us to tell it in the light. This is a time for us to proclaim it from the housetops. This is a time to boldly walk into the future. And I would encourage you to be open. I would encourage you to think boldly, to get excited. I would encourage you to think about how we might continue to make Northwood the amazing place of faith that it always has been. In fact, I would encourage you to think about how we might make Northwood even better as we move ahead into the future. But still, there's fear. Still, there's fear. I think that's why Jesus ends this passage with that dialogue about the sparrows and the numbered hairs on our heads. Are not two sparrows sold for one penny? Yet not one sparrow falls unperceived by God. Do not be afraid. You are of more value than many sparrows. And even the number of hairs on your head is known by God. In Jesus' day, of course, sparrows were a very plentiful bird. They were everywhere. They were just, frankly, a cheap source of protein, eaten predominantly by the poor, is what history records. They weren't really thought of. They were just something you picked up and you ate. But Jesus turns that all around. He said, even these things that you don't pay attention to, God pays attention to even that. And even the way a parent knows their child's head, the way their hair parts to the side, the way that annoying cowlick has to be cut so carefully on a baby's head, God's like that too. God knows you and your gifts and your strengths, and God pays so much attention to each and every one of us. So don't think for a second that you don't matter. Well, as we come to the end of our reflection time, I'd like to roll back the tapes and I'd like to start again. Can I re-preach this sermon? Am I allowed to do that here? No, it probably wouldn't let me. You know what I'd like to do, though? I'd like to change the title. I don't want to talk about fear at the end of this title. I'd like to talk about reverence. Because I think what we're called to do is to walk boldly into the future with reverence. There's a Hebrew word that is translated as both reverence and fear. It's called yare. And yare is one that is not just about fear, but it's also about living reverently. It means standing in awe, having deep respect and deep honor towards something. I must confess, when I was ordained years ago in the United Church, I had some difficulty with my new title of being Reverend. Reverend Scott, Reverend Turnbrook, it seemed like, is that me? And then I was talking to a colleague of mine, and she said, you know, Scott, you better get used to that. She said, that is what you are called to do. Everything you do in the church, your work, should be approached with reverence. And everything you do out in the community on behalf of your church should be approached with reverence. And if you can't work and live and be that way, then you better find a new profession. And I think about each and every one of our ministries, the ways we express our callings to be disciples of Jesus, the same thing applies. The work that we do as Northwood is to be approached with reverence, with honor, with respect, because we are doing the work of God in this Fleetwood community and even beyond. We are called not to live in fear, but we are called to live in awe and respect and reverence for this amazing work that we are called to do. We are called to discern our unique and individual gifts that God has blessed us with. Every hair on your head is numbered. God knows you so uniquely. And you are called to express that out in some unique way that makes Northwood such an amazing community of faith. So friends, let us not be afraid. Let us walk boldly into the future with reverence. May it be so. Amen. And